Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah! Will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 161, Miniature Wargaming, the Movie's second Kickstarter. So I want to welcome everyone to this episode of the show. Whether you're new or longtime listeners alike, you are in for a treat. We have a very special guest joining us today, and we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff, but I want to let you know, you don't have to worry about remembering all of it because it's going to be too much to remember. You listen while you're commuting or you're painting, all sorts of stuff. Just remember the link to the show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR161. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR161. As I said, we have a very special guest. He is the director of the Miniature Wargaming, the Movie documentary, and they are about to launch a second Kickstarter for this amazing project. I'm referring to the one and only Joseph Pittington. Joseph, how are you today?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show, Jonathan. Yet again, it's nice to be here and actually tell everyone and talk about the documentary, so really good.
Well, I'm particularly excited to have you on again because it was such a joy talking with you last time. It was back in, what, December 2015 or so when you were first getting ready to kind of promote the documentary and you had done some work on it, but it was nice to hear what your plans were and now we can kind of see where things are and what's going to be going on. So between December of 2015 and now, what's been going on with the movie?
What hasn't been going on? We have been all over the world, all over the UK, Europe, the States, Canada, Norway. So yeah, we've been everywhere really, just filming. That's what we've been in kind of. So when we last spoke, I think that was, either the run up to the Kickstarter, the first one, or we just done the Kickstarter. And yeah, since then we had such a great response from the community and from the companies. And our obviously original Kickstarter, we funded, well, more than we wanted originally. And off that, we decided to, I guess, grow the film from our initial ideas. And that's really what we've been doing is, as it's a documentary, I'm always learning and we're always learning as a group about the industry because there's so much. And along the way, I will find new things out that I think are really, really important that need to be in the film. But because of that, obviously things become a lot grander and we've got a lot more companies involved than were originally. And also when we first approached with the documentary idea, two of the main stories that are now in the film weren't actually going to be in the original documentary. So things have really changed massively, but all for the best.
Well, I was really excited back, first of all, that the first Kickstarter was successfully funded. You were looking to raise, I think, 3,000 British pounds, and you raised almost double that. And knowing nothing about what's needed to fund a movie or what goes into it, I thought, you know, that's a pretty sizable amount of money. And like, how much does it really cost? But then I thought about it and I was like, is that going to be enough? Because, and I know there are different types of movies, but I keep on thinking back to an American director, Kevin Smith. I'm a big fan of his. He does a lot of podcasting. He created what's considered one of the best modern independent films, Clerks. He did it for under $33,000, sold his car, sold all sorts of stuff, did it, put it into Sundance, got it picked up by Miramax, and people familiar with them know what happens from there. And the rest is basically he became very successful at what he does, writing comics, doing all sorts of crazy stuff. But if his independent movie in black and white, where he didn't have to travel anywhere, he's in a convenience store and he's doing this kind of stuff, it's like $33,000 back in the 1990s in America. I was like, okay, so what does Joseph know that I don't, which I'm sure is a lot, but how can you do this for like 6,000 British pounds, which is like what is that, like 8 or 9,000 American? And I couldn't figure out how you could do it. And I'm thinking, well, let's see how this goes. And I was optimistic, but confused at the same time. And I guess what you're saying is that money that you had anticipated needing then was something that would work for what your original plan. But like any good creative project, things kind of grow into something better than what they were at the start. But would that be true?
Yeah, definitely. And going back to your Kevin Smith point, that I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. He's one of the few directors that I really get inspired by. And I actually finished reading his book a few months ago. So yeah, I get really inspired. And to the point of, yeah, he did spend over $30,000, I think it was, to make his first film. And originally when I asked for £3,000, it was exactly that. It was, I was in a lucky position where I already owned a lot of the equipment that we needed anyway to produce the film. So we didn't have the huge outgoings of camera costs, lenses, and also back in the day, film was so expensive. You know, getting to film print, we shoot everything, digitally. We use a, Panasonic Lumax GH4 that shoots in 4K. So we're using the ultra 4K. So it's filmed for cinematic. It's basically wider. So it's designed for to be used in cinemas. And that's obviously my aim goal, is to get the film into cinemas around the world, into film festivals. So I obviously had the kind of, equipment side all covered. So for me, it was just, okay, I had already spent self-funded up to the point where we'd already got to. So £3,000 was literally, okay, the crew that we have on board, we're all so passionate about the project. So none of us have taken a wage at all. We've all done it completely for free just for the project, because we see it's such a great documentary and a great kind of industry that we want to show. And a great story, that no one has ever touched upon. And for me, as a hobbyist as well, I was always shocked and was kind of the thing of, I can't wait until somebody makes a documentary about the industry, you know. And I've thought that since I can first remember walking into a Games Workshop, and thinking, I want to know how you make these models. I remember years ago researching when the Lord of the Rings Games Workshop picked up the Lord of the Rings license and being like, well, you know, they've picked up this huge franchise, how there must be something about this industry, you know, just because they picked that up, it's a big deal, and nobody ever did anything with that. So it was just one of those things, and eventually, you know, I came to the realization that it needs to be made, and I'm passionate about it, and I'm the right person for the job, you know. So the original budget of £3,000 was solely, we'd already done a lot of the, you know, basic work of getting the equipment, getting certain companies on board, getting people like Henry Hyde on board and Warlord and the Perrys, so on and so forth, that it was, okay, we've now scheduled shooting dates. We just need to pay for equipment to get there, crew to get there, you know, crew expenses, accommodation, all those sort of things. And we can do this in a few months. We can get all the interviews that we want to get. So that's where the original £3,000 budget came from. Also, in hindsight, some of the things that we budgeted for, like color grading and because even the music, we're getting an original score made for the film. All that was very, very low amounts of money, if not free. Our composer wants to be on board because he believes in the project. So he's giving up his time to do. And the color grading was a small studio that we were going to use that was actually in the States. And they weren't going to charge us very, very much money. In hindsight, we wish that we put more things in place, because that's one of the things that now is one of the reasons we're coming back to Kickstarter, is to pay for, is because of this certain studio. They, over the summer last year, they became very, very successful, and they actually picked up some very big films in the industry. But because of that, you know, there was only 4 employees originally, and now there's about, well, I would think over 20 employees. So obviously their, you know, original quote was very lowball, and now we can't use that studio, so we have to look elsewhere. But that will cost more money. So the original £3,000 was really exactly like you said, was we had this idea. We had done all the paperwork. We'd done all the legwork beforehand. It was physically just going and filming and getting this on film. And because we didn't have to pay for, you know, the crew wages, we didn't have to pay for, well, we didn't think at the time color grading, the music was being done. A lot of the software we did have to, out of some of the funds that we did receive, we did have to upgrade some of the software that we were using. Just to deal with the type of ultra cinematic, we wanted to use a better, more digitalized editing software. So we did invest in that. And then also it comes down to the other things that people don't think about when it comes to, you know, the marketing side. So not just to advertise the film, but also getting the DVDs made, getting the cases, paying an artist to do the box art, all these things. When we originally budgeted for, that comes out of the money that we actually made. So as even though we did, you know, almost twice as well as what we wanted, there were certain things that came up along the way that cost more. The art is a prime example. One, the artist is still working on the poster art at the moment, and he's doing an absolutely amazing job. But because of, you know, we want it done to a high standard, these things take longer. So the, you know, original quote, we've been back and forth for the last few months, has slowly increased. So it's all these things that, in hindsight, yes, should we have budgeted for? Definitely, we should have. But that's the hindsight of making a film. It's, you know, it's nice to be able to look back and say, oh, I wish we did. But there's other things that we have saved money on. Like a lot of the flights that we've got to, we've had, you know, people put us up in other countries, so we haven't had to pay for accommodation. So it's kind of worked out equally. But going back to the original point of when we first started, it was really still quite a small project. And because of the growth of the film, and because it's become a lot grander than it was originally, we saw that there was key things that we didn't originally put in the film that we now knew had to be in the film. And that's obviously one of the things why we're coming back to Kickstarter. So it's really the growth of the film is the overall, I'm not going to say issue, but is one of the reasons why our original budget is now being spent, and we're now going back to Kickstarter to obviously get a bit more money to finish making the film. But overall, the film has run very, very smoothly. We're still on schedule. We're still on schedule to have it finished to date. It's just that we need that last bit of investment to pay for things that we now can't afford because of issues that have come up along the way.
We'll get into the question I'm about to ask, or part of it anyway, in more depth a little bit later in our talk. But I know when I first saw that you were doing another Kickstarter for the same film, I was confused and maybe a little annoyed at the time. And I was like, well, you know, things happen. Not everyone else necessarily felt the, okay, things happen kind of way. And again, I want to spend more time on that part of things later on, just to kind of give everyone their fair due. But my question to you, or kind of a thing to kind of just consider, is why not just say, okay, there's a lot more meat here than we thought we were getting a 4-ounce steak, and now we're getting a 12-ounce, you know, porterhouse, and it's going to be delicious or whatever. But let's just cut it off. We do the whole thing that we can do that we originally planned for that 4-ounce steak. We release it, and we see how it goes, and then later on we get all that extra stuff that we came across that would make this even better. But we do that as a separate thing entirety, so that way we run the whole course of this, get this documentary out within budget from, you know, the first Kickstarter, maybe slightly over, but not really needing to look anywhere else for funds, just work with what we have and put it out as is, see what happens. And then, you know, a year down the road or whatever, or however long after that is done, do another Kickstarter and treat it as another completely new and different project. Did that ever enter your mind? And why was that not pursued to fruition?
Yeah, so that's a really, really good question. I'm sure a lot of your listeners will want to know exactly. That is one thing that we looked at doing. And the real and honest answer behind that is we can finish the film on budget. Could we still have a little bit of the budget left? We can finish the film to budget. However, I don't, myself and everyone else involved haven't spent over, because it has been over a year, of producing this film now. And we don't want to put something out that is half cocked. It's as simple as that. We want to produce the best wargaming documentary ever made. And we want people that the industry to think, you know what? We don't need another documentary because that says it all. And yeah, we've looked at doing miniseries and we've looked at, you know, because we do have so much footage already, but that all comes down to time and costs. And my whole thing is I want to still produce the film that I am passionate about and produce it on time so people can watch the film. But obviously because of those issues that, you know, arise along the time, it has formed into a lot better film. And by obviously going to Kickstarter, we can make more funds. But making it into a miniseries has been, you know, has definitely been thrown out, and even get going to TV has also been an idea because, you know, we have got some strong storylines that we could make into 20-minute, you know, little, like a TV series. One of those issues for me that is I'm now giving control over to somebody else that actually decides in the end what goes out and what doesn't. So myself and others involved don't want to give that away because we think it will be put out let's just put it out. It's just content, let's just put it out. And that's the complete opposite of what I want to do. I want to put out something that I am passionate about and I truly believe in. Because at the end of the day, I am taking this to film festivals around the world and I'm not going to even submit something that I don't believe in, because how can I expect to win awards and get other people to even watch the film? Because that's the main goal for me, is I want people, the general public, to be able to watch this film, that go to festivals, or, you know, if it does ever get picked up by, you know, someone like Netflix or Amazon Prime or anything like that later on down the line, I want people to watch that and say, you know what, that is definitely an industry I want to be involved in. And I don't want to put something out that is done and we've cheaped out on, I guess, at the end of the day, that I know, you know, it's okay, let's just pull it out. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, if people want, it's okay and let's pull it out, I'm not the right person, because that's not how I work. And everything that I put out is what I genuinely am, you know, believe in. And obviously, no matter what I put out, some people won't like it. That's just the reality of, you know, doing anything, putting anything out into the world. You're going to find people that don't like it, and that's just personal taste. So for me, that's the main reason why I'm not breaking it up and doing, because I want to just, at the end of the day, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it properly, and I'm going to put the best film out I can possibly put out. So yeah, that's exactly why we're not breaking it up. That's why we're going back to Kickstarter, to get more funds to finish it off and do it justice, do this industry justice, and not just put something out that it's done. You know, we'll just pull it out because no one else has done it, so at least they've got something. Like, that's not, you know, that's not how I work, and that's just not what I'm going to do. So it's as simple as that.
People who are listening to this can't see, or maybe you can hear it. I don't know, but throughout you talking, Joe, big smiles on my face. And the reason is I'm not trying to compare me and what I do in any way, shape, or form to all of what you've been working on, but I feel that I have a tiny taste for your work method and your motivation behind this and your passion, because I do Wargaming Recon, and it's partially funded through Patreon, which is an It's like Kickstarter, for people who don't know, but like on an ongoing basis. And people don't back you on Patreon because they want the cool gadget you're doing, or they want that piece of artwork or whatever. They want that movie you're making. They back you because they like what you're doing and they can tell that you're passionate about it. In all the things that you've said, Joseph, they just check off every single thing on the list for me. So way, way back when Henry Hyde was sharing on his social media that there's this new movie going to be made and there's this guy, Mr. Piddington, and he's going to do all this stuff and I'm going to be on. And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. And that piqued my interest a little bit. But what made me make the jump from, you know, I'll share this with people I know, to I want to have you on the show to talk about it, to I want to give you money for it, is I could tell that you wanted to create something of quality and something that, for me, I want to be able to share with people who don't really know what this hobby of ours is. I want to be able to take it and show it to my wife. And my wife kind of understands what goes on, but not 100%. I want to be able to show it to my baby daughter when she's old enough to really understand what a movie is, what a documentary is, and say, this is what daddy does. This is what all this stuff is. I want to be able to share this with people and tell people about it, because I'm passionate about it as a consumer, as a viewer, and to be able to see this movie for myself and have it so that I can watch it and that I'm not going to forget about it 5 minutes after it's done. And knowing that you have the million going into it, that was why I was willing to give you money, why I was willing to have you come on, so that I could tell people, listen to the show, you guys and ladies should give money too. You should put some support behind this to make it happen. So when that email was first sent out that, oh, there's going to be another Kickstarter for the movie, like I said, I was kind of a tad annoyed, but the reason why I got by it was I knew that creating that better, more fully realized, grander result warranted that option. And I could tell just from our short chat before that you would have looked at everything, and that for whatever reason, other options wouldn't work. They wouldn't create that best result for this project. So I said, you know what? Not everyone's going to like it. And I thought to myself, he's going to get a ton of awful feedback. I knew it, because I've been there. I've been multiple emails and people spamming me and stuff. Just terrible. And that's for a podcast. So for a movie, I thought, oh God, the shitstorm is going to be terrible. But I thought, you know what? They'll be fine. I'm sure they'll be fine. And I sat and waited to see what's going to happen. And it's wonderful that you care enough that you want to do this and wade into these waters, knowing that it's not going to be easy. It'd be easier for you to say, do you know what? I don't work this way, but this is a movie. This is it. And put it out. And that's that. But you're not taking the easy approach. And I think that should really get backers like me who supported the first Kickstarter and encourage us that, you know, we should just cut bait and say, forget that. There's another Kickstarter. Who cares? We gave you money. Now dance, monkey. You know?
Yeah, I do know. I think, going to your point, yeah, of course, I knew as soon as, I want people to be really, really aware that myself and everyone else working on the film, we did not approach this lightly in the slightest. And ultimately, it did come down to me just saying, you know what? I wouldn't be able to, I don't want to use the dramatic term of I wouldn't want to live with myself, but it's kind of true when it comes to, I wouldn't want to, I've spent a year of my life, and people that have backed it obviously mean so much to me, but there's a difference when you back something and you expect it to come out than actually spending a whole year and longer of, because at the end of the day, this is what I do full time. It kind of is Mr. No Days Off at the moment. And since January, very, very much personal time has been taken. It has been all spent producing the film. So I really do understand why people would be very, very hesitant originally to say, you know what, we've already funded the film. He made more money than he originally asked for. Then they didn't budget properly. And yeah, you know, those comments I completely understand and I get, because if I was a consumer and I backed something and they didn't hit the deadlines, yeah, I would also be frustrated. But what I want people to be, to understand that for me, this is my life and I haven't spent a year doing something to literally, I don't know, cheap out on the last hurdle. And that's what it comes down to. Because I really do want to make the best film possible. So for me, it was just, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I would at least want to try and produce the film that I know this film can be, than not try at all and just be like, you know what, I've spent over a year, let's just pull it out. And what people don't understand is even when the film's gone out, that film is going to have my name on it forever. So no matter what I do in my career, in my life, and it will always be there. So at least if I can look back on it and say, you know what, at least I did everything in my power to do to make the best possible film, then that is what I want to do. And also other people will see it, but it's me taking it to film festivals around the world. That's going to be another year of my life dedicated to this film and getting it out and getting people to see it. So it's not just a kind of, a lot of people watch a film and they might love it and they might, hopefully they'll watch it and they'll share it. And other people probably won't, you know. That's the reality of putting stuff out to the general public. But at least if I can say to myself, you know what, I did everything in my power to make the best possible film, then that's what I'm going to do. And that's exactly why me putting another Kickstarter out is why I decided, you know, I'm going to bite the bullet. And we did look at doing other things. We did look at getting financing elsewhere. But then you go down the more issues of other people being involved and other people wanting, you know, kind of their say in the film.
I've seen enough episodes of Silicon Valley to know how that ends.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things. And, I completely understand people might not want to give any more money, and that's completely fine. And people that have already backed it, they need to be perfectly aware. No matter what, even if this next Kickstarter is successful or not, they will still receive a film. Admittedly, if it isn't successful, it's not going to be to the high standard I know it can be. It's going to be a good film, and I already know it's a very, very good film, but I want it to be a great film. And that's what it comes down to. It comes down to, why put something that can be good when I could put something out that's great? And that's exactly why we're doing another Kickstarter.
You know what? For people who, like you said, might feel that you shouldn't have pursued anything else, that you should have just let it go as is, they're the same people who would have gotten the documentary, whether it was a digital download, Blu-ray, DVD, whatever. They would have seen it and thought, wait, this is what it was? I was expecting so much more. I was expecting this and that. And they would be disappointed. And then the next time your name pops up somewhere attached to a project, they would say, I don't know, last time, you know, he was saying all these great things. And then I got this, and it's fine, you know, it's not bad, but it's not great, really. And then they would be annoyed by it. And if you had never done it, they would have been, oh, what if he had done such and that? What if they had done this? Imagine how good it could be. It'd be for those of people listening who are into science fiction, it'd be like, what if Fox didn't cancel Firefly? Could we have many more great episodes of Firefly? Like, what would have happened? And I still do that. I get excited every time there's a rumor on April 1st that Fox is bringing Firefly back with new episodes. What if? I swear people would feel, you know, if only they had gotten more funding, maybe they could have gotten this or done that or added more time or whatever. And like you said, there's no way to make everyone happy. I think it's actually really interesting that of all the different options, including all the different independent funding options, you chose to do with Kickstarter instead of a GoFundMe or a Patreon or other crowdsource or hitting up Uncle Bob or, you know, whoever, or even taking extra stuff and releasing it kind of like Felicia Day did for free on YouTube, do it a web series, The Guild, and see what happens there. But I think even doing that, like you said, you guys looked into everything. Eventually either it's venture capitalists, it's some sort of studio somewhere that's going to have control and change it. So it's not really a documentary like it was originally broadcasted to people that, hey, we're making it. This is what we're going to do. It'd be a project completely different from what all the backers had done originally, or get disappointed from people, or do what you've done. So it's weird because I think maybe for a lot of people, and I can't speak for others other than myself, but I think maybe for people, it might be the closeness to when the first Kickstarter ended. And I know one thing that I was kind of curious about was how soon after the first Kickstarter started or ended, did you guys kind of realize that, wait a sec, maybe we don't have enough money to cover everything and maybe we need to start. There was this quote that you put up on the Kickstarter, under risks and challenges. And it's, I thought this was kind of profound actually, which is why I wrote it down. It says, documentary filmmaking is about being flexible, finding creative solutions to obstacles. We've already encountered challenges and learned to be persistent to make the film we want you to see. And it's that last part that keeps on sticking out in my mind, the film we want you to see, being persistent to do that. And I like that persistence. And if no one else is going to do it, then I want to applaud you for being persistent with it, if nothing else.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And yeah, that's exactly what documentary filmmaking is. You know, there is hurdles and things come up and it's always going to develop throughout the process. And that's exactly what's happened with this is, you know, I was saying to you before and what people won't be aware originally when we came up with the original idea, two of the main stories in the documentaries didn't even exist. We didn't even know the people. We hadn't even met them. So these things have kind of come up along the way that have been real, wow, we've got to put this in the film. You know, they are things that have stuck out for me going, this is exactly what we've been needing to get it to the next level. And that's what it comes down to. There's things that have come up, the issues that I could have never even imagined. One of the main reasons and one of the things that we need more money for is we'd already filmed, before we even went to Kickstarter, we'd already filmed probably for about just under six months. And we'd done all the tournament side. We'd already followed the two gamers to BritCon. That's one of the, I think it's the UK's largest tournament. I think when we went there was 428 games took place in 2 days. That's incredible. But unfortunately, a lot of that footage ended up being unusable. And so that was a real kick in the teeth. And that was, you know, people can say, oh, you should have backed it up. And we did have backups. It came down to the camera that we were using at the time. When it was filming onto the SD cards, it just, for some reason, was not writing it onto the SD cards properly. So when we were moving the cards over, the footage basically didn't come out the way it should have, and the files were unreadable. And that was something completely out of our control. And because of that, we ended up with, we aren't using the camera at the time, at all now. So that's another cost that we've had to, you know, put in that, you know, that was a whole, you know, a huge kind of part of the film. And there's still some footage that is usable that will actually make in the final film, but that whole storyline had already been done. So we'd, you know, I'd already financed that myself. So that was one thing that we had to reshoot. So that dug into the budget. And we only found that out because, the guy, the cinematographer that was actually on that shoot, it wasn't until he sent us the files that we found out that they weren't usable. That was a huge kick in the stomach, kick in the teeth. It really was, that day when we got that, because I realized that I've got to reshoot another 3 months worth of footage in the next 6 months. So hitting, and that's what it came down to, is hitting deadlines. So then it was, well, now we've got to find, we've got to go back to these people and say, we want to come and film with you again. We've got to, you know, we're really, really sorry. It's one of those things. And, you know, now we've got to find another tournament that we can go to. But the reason we chose BritCon was because it is the largest tournament in the UK. But that doesn't run until the end of each year. So we couldn't get it to make hit our deadline. So now we're looking for other creative ways that we can still put it in the film. And you know, we did, and we did run through the thing. We've now filmed that section. But one of the things that we did even consider was cutting that completely from the film. But for me, I thought the gaming side and the tournament scene is such an important part of the industry. You've got to have it in. So, and also I told people this was going to be in the film. So I wanted to deliver on my promises. So, you know, that was just part of the thing that we had to, you know, bite the bullet and go and refilm. So.
Well, let's talk about the new Kickstarter. It begins on June 26th. It runs until August 7th. How does it differ from the first one? Why should people who back the first one back this? So what is there to entice new backers to support this? What are some of the rewards? How much money are you looking at? There's a million questions. Start where you want. And
okay. So we are running from June 26th to the 7th of August. There is reasons why it's a lot longer this time. One of the reasons is because we wanted more people to be aware of it this time around. And we're asking for more money. So we thought a longer stretch. Also, we are attending Historicon this year. So we wanted that to be, from a financing point of view, it made sense for us to, because we were going to be filming Historicon anyway. So for us, it made sense to, run it whilst that was, on, because then from a finance side, you know, we can get more people that wouldn't know about the film. We're at the largest American event, the largest gaming event in the world, for the industry. It just made sense. And then also we had the great kind of honor to host a panel at Gen Con that is between the 4th and 7th. So that's why it ends that weekend, because we're going to be at Gen Con. They've asked me to do a panel and do, you know, an hour kind of segment and talk about the film, talk about the making the film, show the trailer. So yeah, that's kind of why it's those dates in particular. We're asking for a lot more money, and we'll cover why we're asking for more, a lot more than we did originally. We're asking for £10,000, so about what, $15,000-$16,000, something like that. Is that right?
Like that.
Yeah. And what was the other part of the question?
So that would raise the total budget roughly to like 20,000 American or so. It's like 16.
So including the original budget. So before, I don't want to talk numbers, but before and also after, I've been financing a little bit more to get to this point, because no matter what, there were certain things that we had to pay for. So I've funded it, but it's gone back to that position of, you know, I can't afford to fund it anymore because that's the way it is. But yeah, from the original Kickstarter and the new one, it will be, if we make the 10,000, we would have made £16,000, so $24,000. So yeah, a good amount of money, definitely, to make a film. But it comes down to that thing is, people, if they've been staying up to date with all the updates, you can see where we've been, and you can see how that can be spent quite quickly. And we haven't just been, you know, we've had some very negative comments, we're going to anyway, some people that it was one of the comments that really stuck out to me, because it kind of, bothered me at the time, was it just looks like you're going on holiday. You're just using this money to go around the world. Yeah, it's not further, you know, you couldn't get any further from the truth. If people saw my work schedule, they would be amazed that how much is not a vacation, I guess, and how much we go there, we film, we come back. It's, you know, there's no, we don't, you know, we don't even take a detour from the airport to the place to see the sights. It is, we turn up at the airport, we go directly to where we're filming, and then we get filmed there for the day or however many days that we are there shooting, and then we go back to the airport and fly back home. And then we're on to the next location, because we have such a, we did, because actually about 95% of filming is all done now. There's about 5% of the end film that we still need to film. But we had such, because we're trying to produce it in such a short amount of time, we had such a strict shooting date. And because obviously we're working with so many different companies, we've got to schedule everyone in. You know, because at the end of the day, the people that we're interviewing, they are, you know, they run companies, so they're working 9 to 5 every day, you know, they're open. So we've got to slot in around when they can do it. So it's not like we can just choose when we film. So that's been a real, it's going back to the quote of, you know, you've got to adapt, because there was on many occasions where we'd waited 3 or 4 months to be able to go and film somewhere, and then they would give us a date where we'd already arranged to film somewhere else. So it was all these challenges. But we did at one point, I believe, for about 2.5 months, every single day we were filming. So even on the weekends we were filming. I think it was about 16 weeks straight. Our schedule was film, 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 film. So it's been really, really full on, but that's where obviously the money's been spent. And I think people, you know, if they've read the FAQs and stuff like that and they see how much we actually have done with the small budget that we had originally, I think they would be amazed to how much great stuff we've done. So that's kind of, I guess, with the total budget, we're looking for that next step. We've done the filming, and a lot of the next budget is post-production stuff. It's all costs that we can't change at the end of the day. It's not, you know, we can't, you know, scrape a bit of money here, scrape it there, because we are dealing now with licensing and other companies, and they have a set price. And if you don't have the money to pay it, you just don't get it. It's as simple as that. You know, they're a business at the end of the day. They make money. They charge everyone the same amount of prices. And that's not just for licensing. That comes down to, you know, merchandise and all those sort of things. So they're things that we can't cut costs on. And to date, we've cut, you know, and called in as many favors as possible. The community has been so amazing that, you know, even to the point where people have let us, you know, stay at their house, so we haven't had to pay for accommodation. They've, you know, taken us, so, you know, taken the whole crew for lunch, so we didn't have to pay for those expenses. All these sort of things that the community and also the industry have kind of helped to produce the film. And that's what it comes down to. Because I think originally some people were quite hesitant about the film, just saying, you know, who is this guy? Why is he making a documentary? We don't really know who he is. Nobody knows in the industry who he is. How much can he really do? How much can he really know? And I think that was kind of the issue with the original first Kickstarter. We'd got in with a lot of the companies, but I think some people were still a bit hesitant. But I think now, we, especially me personally, we've attended quite a few events. We've gone to, and you can tell that the community are more, they know more about the film. They know who we are now. They know we're doing the film. And, you know, we have been to events and we've been out filming, and people are like, oh yeah, I know, they're the guys doing the documentary. So that's really, really nice that we didn't have originally, because people just didn't know when the first Kickstarter went out that who we are, what we were doing, what it was even about. We've just come out of the blue and we've just said, you know what, we're going to produce this, you know, the best documentary this industry has ever had and hopefully will ever have. So I think for a lot of people that has now finally sunk in of, you know what, they are taking this seriously. You know, it's not just this quick, okay, they've got the money, they're just going to produce something, anything, and then just pull it out because then they've got the money. It's, it couldn't be any further from the truth at the end of the day is, and I've said since day one, for me personally and for everyone involved, we don't get paid to do this. You know, this is, it pays for us to, you know, for accommodation and to feed us. But other than that, we are solely doing it because of passion. And I've never looked at this as making money for myself. You know, it's not like a product that I'm putting out and I'm going to Kickstarter just to get the name out there that, you know, a lot of people do use Kickstarter for these days. It's, I really believe we're using Kickstarter for what it was designed for. And that's why I've decided to go use Kickstarter other, you know, than doing the whole Patreon or, you know, even private funding. It was always that thing because we can, Kickstarter was designed for people like us. It's for people that have this creative idea that just don't have the funds but they have the passion and they have the idea and they have the ability to put it through, but they just don't have the money to do it. And, you know, they ask the general public, you know, help us if you like this idea. So I think we are kind of the original case of why Kickstarter was funded. You know, a lot of people, a lot of companies do get a bad rap for releasing stuff. You know, they're huge companies and, you know, even, you know, big film stars and stuff like that, they, you know, put things out and they rely on that when, you know, they could fund it themselves. And that's the thing. We have funded as much as we can. Now we can't do any more. So that's why we're going back to Kickstarter.
What are some of the rewards that are being offered for the new Kickstarter? Are there different ones from the first one? Or is it a lot of overlay? Are there certain price points? What about stretch goals and that sort of stuff?
Okay. I will be very vague. a lot of the similar rewards are going to be the same. One of the things that have been abundantly clear for me is people want the film at the end of the day. And we're not doing it to, you know, push merchandise and stuff like that. So it is, you know, we still have the same, I think the first four or five tiers are the same. The price has gone up and that comes down to solely because the end product that we're now producing is costing more. It's as simple as that. And also, the original Kickstarter backers, we want them, because at the end of the day, people that originally funded it, they are, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't even be in this position. So we were never going to make it cheaper. We were never going to, if anything, it would be the same price, but because of how, where we're getting stuff printed now, it's costing more. It comes down to the thing. And also because at the end of the day, people, I think if people look at Kickstarter, how it should be done is you're giving the money to make that project happen, not necessarily to receive something. And I think it's been warped a little bit in the last few years where people, they just use it as a pre-order site. So that's what I'm hoping this time around, that yes, we're asking for a bit more money for certain products, but it's because we need that extra money this time around to make, finish the film. It's as simple as that. So the prices have increased, but we have got, so we're doing a special edition that is more grander than the one that we did in the original Kickstarter. It comes with more miniatures this time around. I'm not going to say the companies, but yeah, we've got five exclusive miniatures. One of them is the H.G. Wells one that was offered to the last Kickstarter backers. So that one will be up. But everything else is kind of changed. So the special edition is coming in a special edition tin. It comes with obviously the Blu-ray, the DVD. And we've actually been getting prototypes and stuff like that for it. So that is slightly changed. And one of the rewards that we wanted and what we wanted to give back to the original backers was, okay, you can upgrade for the original price what it was. Because that's one thing that, and actually as an original backer, by us doing better on this new Kickstarter, you're going to get a better product. So even if you got the digital download, you're going to get a better film at the end of the day. It's as simple as that, at a cheaper price than what the new one is. The special edition, one thing that we're going to do to everyone that backed the special edition is we're upgrading you to the new one completely for free. You're not going to pay any more money. You've already paid your money. You're just going to get the better special edition. It's as simple as that. So you're going to get, instead of the two models, because it was the H.G. Wells and then we unlocked one, instead of those two, you're going to get an additional three as just a thank you for believing in us originally. So that's one thing. And then the higher tiers have changed. What I found is, I think they were good, but obviously we didn't have the customer base. So, you know, we're adapting because, you know, I see it as if people didn't want that then, they're not going to want it now kind of thing. So we have got new rewards. A lot of the ones are the same. And the stretch goals this time around, there's a couple that I think are very, very important for the film, for a wider audience, we'll say, to watch it, that weren't unlocked in the last one. But then we have other things that I think were a nice little touches that I think people will spike their interest. But yeah, I'm not going to release too much on that.
But basically people will be able to do, like before, they could get a digital download, they could do DVD or Blu-ray, and like you said, the special thing, will there still be the exclusive hangout or the option to be a guest for the film premiere, that sort of stuff?
Yes, the exclusive hangout, probably not. That's one thing that we're probably cutting from the actual pledge. The film premiere, yes, that is one thing that we're going to put in. We're changing it up a little bit, but that is going to be one of the options. It's going to be very, very, very limited to only, there's going to be five, but one of the things is you get to take, it's you and a guest, so technically it's 10 people will go. But that is going to be amazing. It's going to be such a great event, because we are, you know, taking out a whole cinema and we're inviting everyone in the film. So if, you know, if you want to meet people in the industry, it's the perfect place to meet people because everyone's going to be there.
That was a reward level from the last time I thought was particularly interesting. And if you weren't across the pond, as it were, if you were more local, and if I had such money, that actually appealed to me more than most of them, just because having that contact it's neat. It's the experience. For me nowadays, when I think of giving gifts to people and that sort of stuff, I'm more about creating the memories and the experience than here's like another toaster, here's another whatever. Yeah, you can go and buy it at the local store or on Amazon or whatever, but you can't buy that experience. You can't buy the memory. So being able to do that, I think, is really neat. And I think people are going to like that you're keeping that and you're, you know, modifying and expanding it for the second round.
Yeah, so that's one thing. And I also think for people that are interested for that, is it's one of those things that we're inviting people, and you don't, the sort of companies that we're inviting, the only time you ever see them together is at an event, but you never really get to meet anyone because it's so busy all the time. So it's going to be the one opportunity where everyone's going to be there, you know, to just have a nice night. It's as simple as that. And to, you know, have a night off and just sit back and enjoy the film. And also, you know, there is going to be an after party and stuff like that. So, you know, just be able to hang out and just have drinks and just have a chat and just be human to each other, instead of it being this, you know, everything done online, or, you know, it's customer to client kind of thing. It's that one place where you can really sit back and kind of soak it all in and, you know, meet new people that you'd never be able to meet anywhere else.
And I think it's also a really great reward for someone who's a blogger or a podcaster or just into writing. You go, think of all the stories that you're allowed to share that you can then share in whatever your medium is. You're an artist and you like to paint. You could do a portrait of your experience there. Imagine how cool that would be. Not even if you were to, you know, give it out to other people, but just to have it on your wall, or to be able to have that with you. It, like you said, doesn't happen often, but it's really neat. Like for me, just when I kind of made the jump into going from that strictly, well, these are people that I've read about, I've seen in White Dwarf, and I see the names on, like, you know, rule books and stuff, to, well, I'm connected to them in some way, shape, or form. And I am so starstruck by all of that. It's weird. So then being able to like be next to them, I'd be like, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of what, cause, you know, I come from, I am a hobbyist at heart, and, you know, that's one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about the film. But, you know, getting to meet some of the people, I never thought I would, you know, I never thought I'd met Rick Preece, I never thought I'd meet the Perrys, I never thought I would meet Paul Sawyer. Like, it's crazy. These are people that got me into the industry originally, and they're, you know, they've been putting out the products I've been buying for 16 plus years now. It's been unbelievable. And to be able to sit down and hear these personal stories, and, you know, it's just amazing. And it's one of the reasons that I think why people have kind of got on board with the film a lot more, is because they see that I'm passionate about it and I believe in it. And I'm not there to, you know, like other people, you know, I'm not looking at it, where's my angle? It's, you know, let's just sit down and I want to hear, you know, tell me about your experiences in this industry. Tell me, you know, things that people have never heard of. And that's what the film is. We've got so many stories that I couldn't have even imagined, you know, that will be included in the final film. So even if you're not, I would say even if you're not a gamer or a hobbyist, there's going to be something in there for you. That's one thing, because at the end of the day, these are people and they've lived these amazing experiences. So you will find something in there that will pique your interest. So, you know, and it could be anything. You could have never picked up a miniature before in your life, but there's, you know, we go back to the history. So there is that history side. There is the thing, you know, with H.G. Wells. There is a thing with, Churchill and, you know, a lot of the military side that I, you know, when I found out about it, it was one of those things that, wow, that you've got to include. But then there's also, you know, the Lord of the Rings side, that was such a big part of the industry. So, you know, if you even like Lord of the Rings, there's some stories about the Lord of the Rings, the films, not even the miniatures, that are really like amazing, and how they picked up the license, and you know, how, you know, when they went and met with New Line, stuff like that. So, but then there's also personal stories that I genuinely think is going to be the best thing about the film. And this was one thing that I want to put across to people, that, because I said previously that the film has kind of developed. So one of the things when we sat down and we wrote the script, even though it's a documentary, you're still storytelling at the end of the day. You still need to know where you're going with the story. And the history side is still going to be in there, and that's going to, you know, intrigue the people that the history side, and also want to see, you know, how the industry formed into what it is today. And then we also got, you know, how miniatures are made and stuff like that. But then I didn't feel through that we didn't have a real kind of connection. It came across to me as we were filming that, you know what, this is coming across almost like something you'd see on, the History Channel, more kind of the history base, and we're not connecting with people because there's so many people that have made up this industry. So that was one thing that I looked for, and I looked for people that people could relate to, and real stories that are still inside the industry. That have affected people's lives. So one of the things that we've, and actually two of the main stories, is we've been filming with a guy called Andy Bryant and a guy called Chris Nichols. Andy Bryant is a war veteran and he's got PTSD. Throughout of everything that he served in the Kosovo War, and because of stuff that happened, etc., that you find out throughout the film, he ended up leaving the army and he went through rehab, etc. And one of the things that he found that really, really helped him was painting miniatures. That was one of the things, because, you know, it's a creative thing. They try to get you to do things that take your mind off, that is, you can concentrate anyway. So he was painting miniatures, and off that he started making terrain, just because that's what he enjoyed doing. And friends and family liked what he was doing. He comes from, you know, he was always into board games and stuff like that. So, but they liked the terrain, and over, you know, it started off, oh, I like that river set. I like that house, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'll give you a bit of money if you do me one. So it kind of started, he was selling to friends. And then over the last, it's developed to a point where he was putting stuff on eBay and then selling on eBay. And he's been doing that for about 5 years. And myself and Andy, we met through doing, actually filming the tournament thing that we had to go and reshoot. And we sat down and I found out more about him, and I was just blown away with his story, because it really shows what I think the industry needs. It shows the point of interest that is, anyone can be into this hobby, because at the end of the day, it's a hobby. It doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you're from, and for different reasons, people come to this hobby. So we followed Andy, and he's basically he was eBaying for the last 5 years, and in the last year, he's decided that he wants to make this into his career, into a job, into a viable business. So we've been filming with him since January, actually. And it was, I'm just trying to think exactly when the filming started. I think it was end of January, beginning of February. And anyway, we've been filming with him because he got into Salute. And if people don't know, Salute is a huge event in the UK. It's the largest one-day miniature wargaming event in the world. So he got into that. But obviously, because Andy's still got PTSD and he deals with it every day, really went along the road of triumphs and struggles of him dealing with his issues every day, but trying to get into this amazing industry and try to make a viable business. So that is his story. And it's, I think people really relate to it. And then one of the other main stories is Chris Nichols, who, basically used to work for Games Workshop. Then he went to Mantic and then got headhunted and went to Tor Gaming. And he basically, I think about 11 months ago or so, a little bit longer now, he decided that, you know what, I'm going to start my own miniatures company. And he actually contacted us directly because he backed the film. And he said, hey, you know, I've got this miniatures company. It would be cool if, you know, you could just show some of the minis in the film. And anyway, we started talking, we started communicating, and I actually met up with him. And he was telling me about his story and his, you know, what he's gone through in the industry. And I thought, this is amazing because we've got the big companies. We've got, you know, Warlord, we've got Mantic now, we've got, you know, anyone you can really think of involved in the film, but we don't really have the really, really small startup people. So I ended up going meeting Chris and we sat down and over coffee, I got to kind of experience a day in his life and saw that this is another character that's needed in the film. It's, you know, going back to that point of you need relatable characters and you need people to feel that they're connected to someone along the way, as well as, you know, learning about the history. So we've been filming with him and he has what he's been doing that's different that I was really intrigued was he was making a gateway board game. So he was trying to get board gamers into miniature wargaming and into his universe. So he was going to produce a gateway game. So we basically followed him trying to make this gateway game and releasing it at UK Games Expo this year. And we basically follow the journey up to that point. So they're two stories that I think are going to kind of, people watching the film are going to be like, wow, this is a lot more than we thought about the industry because you have those relatable characters. So, and that was the thing that I've been looking for the whole time of taking it to film festivals. And like we've said, it's going to the general public and getting the general public that don't understand about really about the industry can see these normal, relatable people and how this industry really works on a day-to-day basis. And also you get the whole history of how the industry was started and where it's going to in the future.
Well, I think it sounds like a fascinating new evolution of the project. And I'm excited to see what happens with the new Kickstarter. I hope people who didn't back it the first time take a peek and see if they can give it some love this time. And those who did back it before, I hope they also can give it some love because it sounds like there's going to be something for everyone. We talked a little bit earlier about, you know, feedback from people and that sort of stuff. And that actually brings me to one of my favorite parts of the show here because it, often I feel like I'm just a guy talking into a microphone. I don't always get to talk with other people. So when I have someone like you on, it's fascinating to be able to, like there's someone I'm not just talking to at my computer screen, right? So I love when I get to hear back from listeners. And in this mailbag section, I actually got a couple pieces of feedback from people on Facebook. And I'm stretching the definition of the word feedback. I like to view feedback as helpful. And I guess it is helpful, even if it's, you know, constructive. But one person, listener Tim, left some feedback about episode 160, which I just released, where I kind of do my review of the brand new computer war game, Total War, Warhammer. If people hadn't listened to that yet, I loved it. But Tim said, quote, "Sorry, but fantasy bores me something fierce. Just not interested." And you know what? I get that because it's kind of like how you're talking about with the documentary that some people might think, oh, you know, I'm not really into wargaming. Why am I going to want to watch this? Well, maybe they're into Lord of the Rings, and people who are into aren't into Lord of the Rings are into the wargaming or into the history side. But I think there are these things that exist in life that have this crossover appeal. Just like I think your documentary has this crossover appeal for a much wider audience than those of us in the hobby. I really feel, and I don't know, well, I was about to say, I don't know if you played, but of course you haven't because you're too darn busy. Someday when you get the time and the money to play such a thing, I think you will find that it is really perhaps one of the best modern real-time strategy games that you can play on a computer platform out there. It really makes you, it made me feel like I was living in the World of Warhammer, and that it was in my computer screen, and that I played it as the dwarves. I was like, I'm a dwarven empire, and let me see what I can do. It was great. So knowing, Tim, I'm sorry that the idea of fantasy bores you, and I get that, because I feel that way about a variety of things, which I don't want to say, because I don't want to turn off any listeners. Many things bore me to tears, but I think people ought to try Total War Warhammer. And then listener Andrew actually commented about the episode I released before that, Huzzah 2016. Huzzah is this amazing historical wargaming convention. It takes place up in Maine, and it's beautiful up there, and just wonderful stuff. And I love the people there. I love everything about it. And one of the things that excites me is when I'm able to introduce someone new to something. Last time you were on, Joe, I had some feedback that I released in subsequent episodes from people that said they would not have backed your project otherwise, except they heard it on the show. And they said, you know what? I'm going to do it. And they talked about it on their blogs, and their friends talked about it. They talked about it on their blog. So I got super excited about that. Listener Andrew said about my Huzzah 2016 episode, said, quote, I need to see my calendar, but since I'm localish, I might go, unquote. Andrew, I really hope you make it, because Huzzah, it's no Historicon. I've never been to Historicon, but I think there's something special about these smaller venues, kind of like a smaller game company trying to get started and get going and see where it's going and what they can make for an impact. Huzzah is amazing because there's a lot of these really, really, really tiny game companies. There's a lot of these really small terrain manufacturers and gaming stores, and you get to spend a lot of time with these people there, gaming and hanging out afterwards. Huzzah, it's a family-friendly gaming convention, but it's also one where they know it's mostly going to be 50-plus white men who are going to be hanging out. And so, like, you can drink while you game. You can have a scotch while you game, a beer or whatever while you game. You can go after it and have a pint, and you can share stories, and you can learn tons of things. So it's amazing that you get that interaction back and forth with people you wouldn't necessarily hang out with otherwise, because they live up in Maine and maybe you don't, just like if you were going to the premiere for the documentary. You got to do it. You got to spend the money. You got to be able to go and put yourself in these places, because magical things can and do happen when that comes about. This past year, or this year actually, when I was at Huzzah, I walking around in the room and looking at all these games and stuff, and all these people kept coming to me and saying, are you Jonathan? And I'm looking at them and thinking, do I know you? And how do I know? And I'm not so much with names, but usually with faces. And I'm thinking, no one's ringing a bell. And turns out, and I felt terrible. Like, I met both people before, but one of them was a listener of the show who had met me previously and emailed me and was asking about Huzzah, and I was excited they actually were able to go. And someone else was someone who does this amazing baseball strategy game with miniatures, and you play in historic Fenway Park. It's the baseball stadium here in Boston. And I was excited because it has this really well-known wall for people who aren't into baseball or don't know Boston. It's called the Green Monster. And the Wargaming Recon logo made it onto the Green Monster. The guy loves the show, put it there. And I was like, oh, it was cool. Again, it only happens when you put yourself in these places. When you go to the movie premiere, you go to the gaming convention, you got to do that kind of stuff. And like you, Joe, I also got to pay the bills, right? Because people probably think that, you know, podcasting, it's a guy in a microphone, so it doesn't cost anything, right? Because you just sit there and nothing happens except for what you say, so it doesn't cost you to talk, right? Ears free. And that's not necessarily true. I'm sure people thought, you know, he's making this documentary and he's just gonna fly all over and people are gonna give him everything. It's not gonna cost anything because he has this and that. Wrong, right?
That's yeah.
I go to these game conventions. I talk about games and review them. I gotta buy them. People don't just say, hey, I don't get a call from Sega saying, we heard you like our Total War games. How about we send you the new one, Warhammer, for free so you can talk about it on your show to your audience of 1400 people. They don't do that. Well, not to me anyway. So I gotta spend money for it. I'm blessed though, because I get revenue in a couple ways. I support the show almost completely, or a large chunk, on my own, but I have an amazing sponsor, the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the people who put Huzzah on. They are fantastic to work with, and they support the show. I want to let people know, because this is actually new information. They've scheduled the convention for May 19th through the 21st of 2017. I'm going to be there. I'll be doing another live recording like I did this year. And then the other way that I get to pay the bills, because I hate advertising. Can you imagine releasing your documentary and you have 20 minutes of brought to you by Warlord Games and Games Workshop. And did you check out the new thing by Mantic? And by the way, we have this really, I would turn it off. I'd be like, forget. I'm not wrong. Yeah. Not watching that movie. Back to my no ads Netflix for what I want to watch. So I hate putting ads on a podcast because that's the one thing I don't like about radio. I listen to a lot of radio. I love radio. But every 5 minutes, they're taking a break because do you need to insure your car? Why? No, I don't. I'm fine. Let's get back to the show because I want to. But I'm able to also get support because, like the documentary, I'm supported by people who love what I do. And they do it through Patreon. So I'm truly blessed for the support from Dave and the War Games at Battle Shades Facebook group, Patrick and Chris Parker of Day of Battle Games. There's many other Patreon backers, but what's cool about Patreon, just like Kickstarter, you can have different reward levels so that people can choose how much they want to spend and what they want to get. And I actually have this really cool, or I think it's cool, but I would think it's cool because it's about me. I got this cool new not conceited at all. I get this cool new reward level that I'm actually really excited about. I think it's my new favorite one, mainly because I've been wanting to do it for a long time. And it's come about because of this community of wargamers coming together and doing cool stuff. So listeners of the show, or anyone really who wants to support the show on Patreon, for $18, that's 18 a month, you can get a set of 6 custom Wargaming Recon dice. They're laser etched wooden. It's 6d6s. They're great. They roll really well. I love them. I'm keeping a set for myself because, well, I count that as marketing, right? Because I go to games and I play and run stuff. Hey, look, did you see this? By the way, I wear my Wargaming Recon shirt. I got it all worked out. But seriously, these are nice dice. And Christopher Rhett, who is a very nice gentleman, who I met through the Maine Historical Wargamers Association because he goes up and does stuff with them. He was working on a special set of dice for them for the convention. I said, hey, can you do something for me? He designed the logo. He did all the work. $18 gets them mailed to you just through Patreon. But I have all sorts of other things. You can get cool personalized postcards that I do. It has a logo, and then I write all sorts of stuff. These are actually a lot of fun for me because it's that contact with people, right? I just love interacting with people and hearing things. So it's cool that you can do that. And people, if you're interested, support the show, wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. It's fun, right? It's a lot of work, but it's fun interacting with all the backers, isn't it? I mean, usually.
Yeah. It's really nice to get personal feedback, and you know, you can always develop your, if you're doing a show or a film, around what people want. Because at the end of the day, you're putting something out that not only you believe in, but you want other people to like. So,
well, I've really enjoyed reading all of the updates that you posted on the Kickstarter page, the first Kickstarter, I should say, since we've been talking about the second. And also the comments from people. Even when people haven't been completely enthusiastic, I feel they've been respectful, and I applaud them for that, because too often in the age of the internet, it immediately goes down that rabbit hole and bad things happen. Just really bad.
Yeah, definitely.
So it was nice to see that. And I want to remind everyone, of course, by the time everyone's listening to this episode, I will have probably already recorded the next one. But I have coming out soon. Alyssa Faden's going to be coming on. I don't know if that's a name you're familiar with. She's involved in all aspects of the hobby, does a lot of cartography, and she's really into Napoleonics and ancient Rome, and she's involved with Enfilade, actually, out in the west coast of the U.S., and she's going to come on and talk about all that kind of stuff. And then a name you probably know, Joseph, is Jesper Ortiz of Current Story Publishers. He's coming on. This is going to be like his fifth time, I think. I've won a lot. But he's going to talk about the Great Wargaming Survey for 2016. It's like the third year they've done it. And I love having people on, so I'm not that lonely guy in the recording studio talking about ice. No, it's because they're interesting. I have this rule, and it kind of feels like maybe you also have this sort of rule, although you didn't specifically phrase it this way. But I have this rule where I don't talk about anyone or anything that I don't like. So if it doesn't make it onto the show, either I don't know about it or I'm not viewing it favorably. So people I like and things that I love get on the show, and if they don't, then I probably don't love them. There's a lot of not nice things in the world, right? So it's kind of nice to be able to talk about wonderful things. That's why you're here, because you're doing wonderful things. And so I'm delighted to have you here.
I really appreciate that. And it's great to be, you know, in the show, because it all comes down to meeting new people. And, you know, if I wasn't doing the film, we would have never met. So it's great to obviously be a part of that.
Well, it is a true pleasure having you here. And I know you get a skedaddle because you're busy. You're doing a documentary. And you hired someone to handle this kind of stuff. And yet you're here doing this with me. So thank you.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's one thing that obviously we've had to hire people full time now, because there's just so much admin side that goes in with making a film. So that's one cost that we have to now pay for.
Well, I just appreciate that you weren't like, I got this email from that Jonathan guy. I'm going to staff it out and let someone else can go on and talk. We're like, I'm sorry. We're too busy. We get Kickstarter movie, right? Yeah. I was hanging with Rick Priestley, and I'm going to come on your show. Forget that. Maybe once upon a time, but not. I appreciate you didn't do that.
No, definitely. Yeah, I'll be here to talk about the film, and maybe when the film's out and you've watched it, I can come back on and you can give me your thoughts and feedback.
That sounds delightful and scary at the same time. But I would love that. I'd love to have you on as often as you want to come. Open invitation again, seriously.
Awesome. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you again. And for everyone listening to the show, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're going to back the Kickstarter project when it releases. I'll have links on Fledge social media with how people can get into all that and support it and everything. I'm excited. I hope other people are too. And that's that. So as people know, I get this tag, and I don't even know how it started. I think it's just, I started doing it, and then one day my wife was like, so what's that tagline you do at the end of your show? I'm like, tagline? What do you mean? What do I do at the end? It's episode 161. I guess I've been doing it every single episode. So I kind of feel like I don't have a new one, so I got to keep on doing it. Although it's kind of embarrassing to me, because it feels stupid saying it, because whatever.
Go for it.
It is what it is, right? No matter how busy you are in your life, no matter how many minis you get to paint, or how much time you want to sit and think about how much money you want to throw at the Miniature Wargaming documentary Kickstarter, you know, you have to, you gotta, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other great shows on the network.
This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew, who helped give the show its name. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.